Chapter 3 Sienny awoke with a sore right shoulder and a numb right ear, the right side of her face still burrowed into her pillow. She blinked at the steady sunlight streaming in through the uncovered window opposite the bed. It looked to be around 7:30, perhaps 8. It took her a moment to identify that the cluttered nightstand and window were not her own. The blankets were definitely Emery's. She sat up, blood running back into her ear, and scanned the bed. Empty, and made up on one side. She rubbed her eyes and pulled the tie from her messy braid, running her fingers through the long, wavy locks. Her chest flushed, just a little, more in temperature than in color. She wasn't as embarrassed as perhaps she should be. She had requested the floor, after all. Not that she minded the invitation. Had Sienny been in a better state of mind, she might have taken advantage of it. She smiled, picturing what magician Avioski's face would look like if the gaffer ever got wind of last night's arrangement. She'd be furious. Magician Avioski knew about their special relationship, of course. At least, Sienny felt certain she knew. She'd confessed her feelings for Emery to her once mentor, but nothing more. Still, the way Magician Avioski's eyes narrowed when she saw Sienny and Emery together, that distinct hum she made in her throat, told Sienny the gaffer assumed more. Hopefully no one else did. At least not yet. The door opened then, and Emery entered back first, carrying a small wooden tray in his hands. Fennel scurried in between his feet and barked, sniffing about the bed and wagging his tail. The mattress was too tall for him to leap up on it. Emery, already dressed, set the tray on the bed. It held two pieces of buttered toast and a 7-minute egg.
"Oh, Emery, you didn't have to do this," Sienny said.
Emery shrugged.
"I suppose I didn't,"
he replied. He sat on the opposite corner of the bed, the mattress's edge, so as not to disturb the tray.
"Are you feeling all right?"
"Mmm,"
she said, mouthful of toast. She swallowed and added,
"Thank you."
He merely smiled. Fennel, giving up on Sienny's side of the bed, scampered over to Emery's feet and began tugging his pant leg.
"Emery," Sienny said, pausing her breakfast, "what was that telegram about yesterday?"
"Hmm?"
he asked, shaking Fennel free. For a moment, Sienny imagined equipping the paper dog with more substantial teeth. Plastic, or perhaps steel. The latter would likely weigh his head down. And what did Sienny need a dog with steel teeth for?
"I suppose it's well for you to know now,"
Emery said, combing back his hair with his fingers.
"You see, I won't be the one testing you for your magicianship."
Sienny's hand hovered over her breakfast tray. She processed the words.
"Pardon?"
"I won't be the one initiating your test,"
he repeated. An uneasiness filled her, like a boat tipping back and forth inside her chest. Sienny moved the tray aside and scooted forward on the bed.
"But are you joking? The apprentice manual states clearly in the preface that the apprentice's mentor is the one who gives the test for magicianship."
"So it does,"
Emery said, his expression a little softer now, but not teasing. He stood from the bed and walked to his closet, grabbing his indigo coat from its hanger and slipping it on.
"It's something that's been on my mind for months now. Surely it's crossed yours."
He paused again at the foot of the bed and looked her over, smiling with his eyes. His lips, however, bore the slightest frown.
"I'm worried anyone who suspects our relationship will believe you were tested with a bias."
Trying to hide her own frown, Sienny nodded.
"I did consider that once or twice, but I haven't told—"
"Sometimes, darling, you don't have to say it out loud,"
Emery interjected.
"I've made other arrangements for you. You're a wildly talented Foldesini, almost as much as myself,"
he added with a pompous grin.
"I would hate to have anyone cast doubts on your abilities, now or in the future."
Sini felt herself droop a little. She couldn't help it. Without Emery as her tester, she was faced with yet another unknown in this process. She knew even less of what to expect now than she had this morning. And if she didn't pass the test the first time, she'd have to wait another 6 months. If she failed 3 times, her name would be crossed out of the books forever. Unredeemable. Any subsequent attempt at magic would send her to a jail cell. What if she didn't pass? She sucked in a deep breath.
Very well, I trust you in this. May I ask who will be handling my test in your stead?
Ah, yes, Emery said, clapping his hands together. I got his consent in that telegram. You, Cini Twill, will test for your magicianship under the scrutiny of magician Pritwin Bailey. Actually, you'll be staying with him and his apprentice for a couple weeks prior to testing, as per tradition.
Sini's lips parted, and a moment later she asked, A couple weeks?
2 or 3.
Magician Bailey, she asked, twisting a lock of hair around her index finger. The name wasn't familiar, but... She paused, her memory itching at her. Something about it... For a moment, Cini found herself reeled back into the halls of Granger Academy, the secondary school both she and Emery had attended. The memory was not hers, but his, something she had spied when she traveled through his heart 2 years ago in an attempt to rescue it from a horrid exciseur named Lyra, who also happened to be Emery's ex-wife. She recalled Emery and 2 other boys picking on a gangly, aspiring folder. A folder named Prit.
Prit? She asked. The boy you bullied in school?
Emery scratched the back of his head.
Bullied? Sounds so juvenile.
But it's him, isn't it? Cini pushed. Pritwin Bailey. He became a folder after all.
Emery nodded.
We graduated from Praff together, actually. But yes, he's the same.
Cini relaxed somewhat.
So you two are on good terms, then?
The paper magician barked a laugh.
Oh, heavens, no. We haven't spoken to each other since Praff, save for this telegram. He quite loathes me, actually.
Cini's eyes bugged.
And you're sending me to test with him?
Emery smiled.
Of course, in a few days. What better way to prove you had no bias than to place your career aspirations in the hands of Pritwin Bailey?
Cini stared at him a long moment.
I've been shot to hell, haven't I?
Language, love.
She pressed a palm to her forehead.
I have more studying to do than I thought. I'm doomed. I need to get dressed.
She rose from the bed and hurried out into the hallway, palm still pressed to her forehead. Fennel following at her heels.
You haven't touched your egg.
But Cini had far larger concerns on her plate than breakfast. Cini read through another 8 chapters in the folding dissertation Emery had given her, occasionally pinching herself to keep her mind alert and attentive as she read each long-winded, dry-as-toast paragraph about spells she already knew. Regardless, she refused to skim, and she studied the diagrams as though she had never heard of a full-point fold. At least the artistic style in which the dissertation had been illustrated was new to her. She later assigned herself complex animation for practice, picking an animal she had never before created. A turkey. With a few pictures for reference, she carefully folded tail feathers and crimped paper to form a spherical body. She used 3 square pages for the neck, another for the head, and carefully cut and morphed a beak and snood. It took her the better part of the day to create and animate the fowl. The next day, she folded a larger turkey using more paper, carefully interlocking each piece to ensure safe mobility. After 2 days of working on that, she worried her knees would permanently indent with the lines of the floorboards she'd knelt on for hours. Knowing the importance of her test, Emery seemed content enough to keep to himself, but he did pop in on occasion to offer advice, persuade Cini to take a break, or, oh, maybe cook something. Cianni could only smile at the veiled requests. By the end of the week, however, Cianni had thoroughly burned herself out on dissertations and animation, so she retreated to her closet to study up on siping, the magical manipulation of rubber. She crafted the rubber buttons into paw pads, though she had to discard the first two after cutting them wrong, then used affixing spells to adhere the pads to the bottom of Fennel's feet. This way his paws wouldn't wear out as often, and if he stepped in a very shallow puddle, his paws wouldn't crumple into soggy wads. After studying her finished work for a moment, she nodded to herself, satisfied that Fennel's feet could pass as a mere craft project, nothing that would make a magician look twice. Utterly tired of all things magic, Cianni went to bed early that Friday night, only to be woken a few minutes past midnight. Not by a nightmare, thank goodness, but by the faintest click-click sounds heard through the wall, just loud and familiar enough to pull Cianni from the space between dreams. She lifted her head from her pillow, holding her breath to be sure she had heard right. The noise continued. Click-click-click-click-click. The telegraph. She sat up in bed, careful not to rouse Fennel, who dozed on her mattress tonight, curled up near her feet. She rubbed her eyes and put her bare feet to the floor. Who would be sending a telegram this late at night? The weather was clear. Why not send a paper bird instead? Was Prit as opposed to normal rest as Emery was? Was this a message to cancel their arrangement? Cianni wouldn't mind if it were. She stepped out of her room. The cracks around Emery's door were dark, so she padded to the library and opened the door. The telegraph clicked steadily from its place on the table. It stopped before Cianni took two steps into the dark room, leaving her alone in an eerie silence. Cianni reached for the switch for the electric lights and flipped it. The bulbs hanging from the library ceiling flickered on for a moment before their light frazzled out, recasting the library in shadow. Blinking purple spots from her eyes, Cianni flipped the switch back and forth a few times, but to no avail. Had the power gone out again? Being so far from the main city, Emery's circuitry had a habit of turning sour. She padded across the room, avoiding the loudest floorboards out of habit. She reached the table and tried the lamp, but it too stayed dark. She lit the candle beside it instead and picked up the curling telegram. The brief message seemed scrambled for a minute. She scanned the words, but they didn't stick in her head. She tried again, slower. Prendi escape en route to Portsmouth for execution. Stop. Thought you should know. Stop. Alfred. Stop. Her fingers went numb holding that slip of paper. It didn't tingle beneath her touch as it should. It felt dead, limp, heavy. Alfred. She hadn't seen Magician Hughes since her ordeal with Grath, which had finally brought her entwinement with criminal affairs to an end, or so she had believed. Cianni's eyes fixated on the telegram's first word. Prendi. Saraj Prendi. Grath's dog. The Excisioner, who had tried to kill her twice, all for the sake of convenience. The man who had threatened the lives of her family and her love. And now he was loose.